This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And you're listening to Dave Brubeck there, whose music we're celebrating all hour. He passed away just a day before his 92nd birthday, we learned yesterday. But we begin with a question. What's stranger? More than 60-degree temperatures for Christmas shoppers in New York in December right now? Or an international conference on climate change and regulating fossil fuels held in a nation with some of the largest stocks of natural gas on the planet? That neither is getting much attention is perhaps the strangest thing of all. International goals on dealing with climate change are slipping away. The UN Environment Program says the world is unlikely to be able to avoid global temperatures rising 2 degrees Celsius, goals for holding the line that were set just 3 years ago. Delegates from around the world are in Doha, Qatar, the natural gas capital of the oil-rich Persian Gulf, to discuss all this. And there hasn't been much attention. Just as climate change fell off the radar in the U.S. presidential campaign, this conference might as well be at a casino in Dubai, for all the urgency it has right now. A spokesman for vulnerable island nations threatened with inundation from sea level rise says dubiously of this conference, the Doha caravan seems to be lost in the sand. Joining us from the conference in Qatar is Roger Harabin, the BBC's environment correspondent. Welcome to the program, Roger.
Yeah, hi. It's actually worse than you say, I'm afraid. I don't know about temperatures in New York. They're pretty stable here. But the World Bank and the International Energy Agency say we're heading, in their view, for between 4 and 6 degrees Celsius warming, which would undoubtedly bring us catastrophe. Even climate change skeptics agree that we shouldn't be going that far in terms of warming. And these talks here are being chaired by, and this is almost, you have to pinch yourself with this one, the talks are being chaired by a man who used to be the president of OPEC, the oil exporting cartel. So it is actually all rather more bizarre even than you described.
I mean, we could spend the entire segment noting these ironies. I believe Qatar itself is the largest per capita emitter of fossil fuels in the world.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's per capita emissions that really count. What actually really, really counts, if we could measure it, which is very difficult, is consumption emissions, which is the amount of emissions that's embedded in everything you consume. So in the UK, for instance, we managed to reduce our emissions by shifting from coal to gas, but we also shifted our heavy industry abroad. We let the Chinese take our manufacturing industry, and then we blamed them for creating emissions, making the goods that we then buy back. And that's the real way to measure things, if you could do it, but it's too complicated.
Well, given that complicated, interconnected quality of the global manufacturing economy and some of the statistics on rising temperatures, what's the best case scenario agenda for any kind of agreement or consensus at this meeting?
Well, look, this meeting, it's an interim meeting. We're moving between two phases of the climate change talks. So there's the old agreement, the Kyoto Protocol agreement that President Bush famously or infamously, whichever way you look at it, walked out of. That was the agreement that saw rich nations cutting emissions and sending money to poor nations to help them adapt to climate change or get clean energy. Now, that meeting has been compromised ever since the US pullout. We're going to wind up that agreement. And what they're supposed to be moving towards is a new deal, which the US demanded, a deal under which all nations in the world would be bound together under the same treaty with the same sorts of responsibilities to reduce the emissions blamed for changing the climate. The question here is one of equity. You know, how do you make a fair agreement? If you can imagine the complexity of this with everybody stuck in their own national self-interest, it really is fearfully difficult, and they need to make far more progress than they're doing at the moment.
I'm wondering, before we go, if you've noticed a change from rhetoric which tries to prevent the warming that we now begin to see increasingly as inevitable and focusing more on adaptive changes, assuming that there are going to be sea level rises and focusing on how do we deal with that, like, for instance, raising dikes in areas that are likely to be flooded, that sort of thing.
Yes. You know, that may be possible if we have a relatively small temperature rise. If we have temperature rises at the high end, then we are facing massive, massive problems. So even in the USA, for instance, if you look at the problem of defending a place like New York, well, economically, you would defend Manhattan. If you defend Manhattan against the sea, that actually makes it worse for the other areas of New York because the waters will rise because they can't flood onto Manhattan. So when you start to look at issues like that, you see that, you know, people say, or some people say, oh, don't worry, we'll just adapt to it. Well, the answer is adaptation for a lot of people ain't going to be very easy.
And it involves a trade-off, and those trade-offs will all be very politically significant. Roger Harabin is the BBC environment correspondent, speaking with us from Doha in Qatar on the International Conference on Climate Change. Thanks so much. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.